It's Monday here on the North Shore Drive podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carter, going to be joined by Adam Bittner and Noah Hiles today. We're going to talk Steelers at first. We're going to talk a little bit about the leadership that needs to happen from certain players on the Steelers team this year for things to go in the right direction, kind of change the tone that hasn't been there for the past couple seasons. That plus some talk about Hard Knocks and Cam Hayward's opinions on the team being followed around closely by cameras, and Noah Hiles on the Pirates getting back to 500 before the All-Star break. It's Chris Carter, the North Shore Drive podcast. Let's get into it. You are now listening to the North Shore Drive podcast, a show on all things Pittsburgh sports from the writers of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, hosted by Christopher Carter. Hello and welcome to the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I'm your host, Chris Carter, here with Adam Bittner. And as always, you can find the show on your favorite podcasting apps and on YouTube. Like this video if you enjoy it. Subscribe to this channel to get all of our Monday, Wednesday, Friday episodes of the North Shore Drive podcast, as well as the daily content that comes out from all of our Pittsburgh Post-Gazette sports writers here in Pittsburgh. And as always, this show is brought to you by Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in all of Pittsburgh. When you go to Mike's Beer Bar, they're on the North Shore. They're right across the street from PNC Park on Federal Street, but they have the best beer selection in town. You go there, they have a 500 different available beers, 300 of those beers from the local Pittsburgh area, and 80 of those local beers are available on tap all day, every day. And they're always switching new ones in and out, so you can always get a new experience when you go to the best bar in Pittsburgh, and that is Mike's Beer Bar. Adam, we're rejoined by you, sir. We hope that you had a great weekend. I wanted to lead off today's discussion talking about what I think is, and I've talked about this a little bit before on the show in kind of passing, but I wanted to focus on it for at least a segment here today. And I think that a big part of what needs to happen is that there needs to emerge an offensive leader or two this year that can stabilize this group. And I think that as much as people want to focus on Russell Wilson's play action ability, his deep ball ability, his mobility, you know, all the things that he can do physically, I think his presence on the field, off the field, in the locker room is just as important as his play. Because this is a team, Adam, and you and I were talking about this before we hopped on camera, but this is a team where they had guys like Ben Roethlisberger, Marquise Pouncey, David DeCastro, who were able to kind of steer the group in the right direction when things weren't going well. But they haven't had that guy for the last couple seasons, and it's been noticeably part of the problem. And yes, offensive coordinator is part of the problem. Quarterback play in general is part of the problem. But I do think that there is a bit of an intangible boost that can happen if there's just a steady leader that people can kind of get behind and knows how to handle the adverse moments that always happen in football.
Yeah, I think that shows up in the fact that, you know, you never thought the Steelers were out of a game with Ben Roethlisberger. I can't, especially, you know, even in that last season in his career when he was physically limited, you know, he was still able to rally the team and he knew what needed to happen. And he had guys around him. You mentioned DeCastro, Pouncey. Those guys knew what needed to happen, and they kind of got everything in order around them. And that's why they were able to, you know, stage a lot of comebacks, even though they probably were not talented enough, or at least not as talented as some of the teams that they were beating. You know, in those late game situations, they had the things that they needed. And I think what we've seen with the Steelers the last couple of years is you knew games were over at times, right? I think of that Arizona Cardinals game last year, you know, the 49ers game in that season opener, just games that were over and you knew they weren't coming back. Those were much rarer under Ben Roethlisberger. And I don't want to knock, you know, Kenny Pickett too much, because I think he's gotten enough flack already. He did lead some comebacks. You think about that the Raiders game on Christmas Eve a couple of years ago, the Ravens the following week. It's not as if they lacked the ability to come back. There were just more instances of games where you're like, they're toast, they're done. And I think that's the kind of thing that comes back to leadership, right? Is because even if you struggle early offensively in a game, you need that veteran leadership to be like, just keep grinding, man. Just keep grinding. Let's get 7 points here. Let's get a little bit of momentum. And you know, that gives you a chance to surge at the end of the game and win games. They lacked that at times. And you could tell that the confidence of the entire unit was shaken and did not come back because they didn't have anyone in the, you know, huddle that they necessarily believed in. And I think that's a big thing, too, is even if Russell Wilson plays a terrible first half, he can command the respect of his teammates and give them a belief that, yeah, we had a bad half, but you might be down 17 points, but we can come back here. I just don't think that that was there with Kenny Pickett or Mitch Trubisky for that matter.
Listen, I think that that's certainly part of it. And to your point, yeah, Kenny Pickett had 6 fourth quarter comebacks, 7 game winning drives, but a lot of those comebacks happened because the defense held the other team in check and the offense did just enough to get over the line. Whereas to your point, veteran quarterbacks like Ben Roethlisberger and a lot of the comebacks they had, sometimes it was multiple possessions. I mean, we saw, you know, there was the 1 year against the Broncos, I want to say 2017 or 2018, maybe it was 2016, actually, I think, but they were down by like 20 some points and they found a way to battle back in those. You don't see that in today's Steelers, you know, really coming up now. And I think that's where Russell Wilson can be a guy who can string together consistency, can string together positive plays. And even when he's playing poorly, he can find a way to snap himself out of it because he's done that a lot in his 13-year career. I think that there's a lot to this, Adam, that I think that goes into it. But I think it's also the Steelers need to develop the leadership culture back on offense. And I talked about this with Ryan Shazier. We had him on shortly before the NFL draft on the North Shore Drive podcast. And he talked about how, you know, when he came into the Steelers in like 2014, you know, there was he was coming onto a team that had Cam Hayward, who was already on the up and up. You know, Lawrence Timmons, I think, had just finished things out. And then there was, you know, guys like, you know, Troy Polamalu was just finishing out his time. But there was a transition of leadership where he could fall in line behind established guys who could kind of say, hey, Rook, this is where you got to go. This is where to be. And then when it was his time to lead, he was a leader. And he led along with, you know, with Cam Hayward and eventually T.J. Watt and then Micah Fitzpatrick. And that's how it's carried over from the years. But there was a straight cut that happened when Pouncey and DeCastro had to retire within the same year, and Ben Roethlisberger's, knees gave out, or how he just got old, and that led to him not being able to stick around much further. And we even saw it, like, you know, I was at training camp. We talked about how in Najee Harris's rookie season, Ben Roethlisberger was trying to impart wisdom upon him, but it's like you're only getting a year with a rookie running back, and that's not the same as far as trying to cultivate a leader who's going to be the one that everyone rallies behind on the offensive side of the ball. And I think, again, that Russell Wilson is a guy who's won a Super Bowl, been to 2 Super Bowls, had several great moments in big games, and can step up in those moments and help other guys learn how to do that themselves. So that, again, Russell Wilson's not expected to be in Pittsburgh for too long. He's on a 1-year deal. But if he can just help establish that so that next year the leaders are, I don't know, Broderick Jones or Najee Harris or Pat Freiermuth or whoever, that can go a long way to what they really need to do long-term for the offense.
Yeah. And I think this is a chance for him to, you know, it's a legacy thing too, as well, because you think about the way things ended in Denver with the stories of him, you know, kind of being aloof, having his own office in Denver where he wasn't really in the locker room. I think we've seen kind of a different Russell Wilson so far. He's made a commitment to be in Pittsburgh, even though he has, you know, properties elsewhere. He's got lots of other things he could be doing. But he was going to Kennywood with his family, right? And I think that's reflective of a guy who knows, hey, maybe I didn't get some things right in Denver, and I have a chance, you know, with one of the premier, you know, franchises in the league to, you know, have a legacy here. And you know, that goes beyond me just winning possibly in 2024, but kind of setting the table for these guys to be telling stories about me when they win a Super Bowl. You know what I mean? Right. And I think it's not just something we're speculating about. I think we've seen it with him to this point. And something else we were talking about off camera, Chris, that I think is really important is that Russell Wilson kind of knows where the ball needs to go. And I think that's a big component that the Steelers have missed. You know, I think you and I went back and forth about Pro Football Focus grades for Ben Roethlisberger on Twitter at one point, in his last couple of years. And I was very into the analytics of that and said, listen, Ben Roethlisberger is one of the worst quarterbacks in the league by statistics. But then, you know, late in that final season, he was winning, leading game winning drives. And it's because he knew where the ball needed to go more so than the guys who've replaced him. I think that's going to be a big component, is that, you know, A, can Russell Wilson still get it there? If he can, I think he has a chance to be really good. But even if, you know, he is physically diminished to some degree, I think his mind can be, you know, an asset that the Steelers have lacked. And I think that's part of leadership, right, is being confident that this is where the ball needs to go and this is what we need to do. Guys feed off of that in the locker room. So I think that's an important component as well.
Absolutely. I want to talk about another component that's going to be happening this season. It'll happen later this season when Hard Knocks is going to be covering the Steelers. We've talked a little bit about that, but Cam Hayward had some interesting things to say. We'll talk about that next here on the North Shore Drive podcast from Chris Carter and Adam Bittner of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. But first, I want to remind you, the show is brought to you by Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in Pittsburgh. And when I say that, I actually mean that. I'm not just saying that because I'm on a show here. I go to Mike's Beer Bar. I love Mike's Beer Bar. They have over 500 different available beers, from IPAs to summer beers to winter beers. If you want to get a stout, if you want to get a Hefeweizen, they got the best kinds. And 80 of those, 300 of those beers are from the local Pittsburgh area. 80 of those local beers are available on tap. And if you're a person who loves Pittsburgh and Western Pennsylvania beer, you're going to love this place because they're always, Mike is always going out, getting the new stuff and bringing it right to Mike's right away so you can get it on tap. There's new stuff every single day. You got to go to Mike's Beer Bar and try it out today. They also have amazing food like their steak on a stone meal where you get your choice cut of steak brought to you on a heated stone, and you could cut off every single bite, press it into the stone, and you choose how well done you want every single bite. And it's not just stones. They also do scallops. They also do swordfish on a stone. They also do pork chops on a stone. You got to try it. It's amazing. Go to Mike's Beer Bar today, and when you get there, tell them Chris sent you. Back here on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Chris Carter, Adam Bittner. Adam, let's get into a few things here as far as Hard Knocks. And Cam Hayward sounded off a little bit on this recently and some displeasure about what could be happening here. What did you see from how Cam Hayward responded to the Hard Knocks situation that's going to happen for the Steelers?
Yeah, I mean, he said he hates it, and I think his concern is that they're going to be invading the locker room. And they do. I mean, Hard Knocks has, you know, pretty wide access to the teams and the meeting rooms and the locker rooms and all of that. And his concern is that they're going to come in and they're going to get someone in a gotcha moment and they're going to put that in the show and ruin someone's life. And that, you know, that seems to be the substance of, you know, his criticism of the show and having the cameras around. I found that take interesting because I watch Hard Knocks. I watched the quarterback show last season produced by Peyton Manning. It was on Netflix. I'm watching the receiver show right now with Devontae Adams, Amon-Ra St. Brown, those guys. And that's not really the tone of these shows, in my opinion, Chris. It's not gotcha television. I think if it was, the NFL would be leery of cooperating with it. It's more about just kind of showing the day-to-day. And, you know, I don't think if someone says something off color that they're just going to rush to put that in the show to humiliate a guy. Right. But I don't know. What say you?
I as a person who loves football content, just because it gives us more access and it's always interesting to see other sides of these players, I do think there's a benefit to it. I talked about this in other shows. You know, I think a show like Receiver could be really helpful to a guy like Amon-Ra St. Brown, who isn't, you know, if you're a football fan, you know him and you're like, well, that guy's really impressive. But if you're the casual fan, you had no idea who that guy was. You're like, oh, he plays for Detroit. I guess they were good this year, right? You know, but stuff like that can really boost your profile. And, you know, that's something that Cam Hayward's trying to do. He has a podcast now, like, where he's trying to show, hey, I'm this marketable person who has a brand that people love and enjoy. And so I do think it can benefit them. I do also get the Steelers' willingness to keep people out. I mean, you know, full transparency, like, you know, the Steelers, you know, we don't get to go into the Steelers locker room until they break things down after a game. We're not in there. Like, you know, if you think back to like when Joey Porter used to say things like they shot me in Denver. We don't get those moments no more because we're not in there around those times. There's no cameras for that. And I think that's where, you know, the Steelers have, you know, lines of protection. So I think part of this might be the fear of the unknown of Hard Knocks. And look, I'm sure there's moments in locker rooms that they'll keep out. Like, you know, Cam Hayward might be like, these guys say I look like Chris Carter. I'm not as ugly as that dude. Like, you know, that HBO will probably block that part out. But at the same time, I do think that there's a level of like, hey, there's a level of decorum the Steelers have kept right with us around. And now they're probably going to want to try to keep that up more often with those cameras around. And how much can they do there? Like, you know, there, you know, when we go to the locker room, there's certain things that we're not, if this person isn't talking, we're not allowed to say that. And so I'll be interested to see the level of access that HBO gets for Hard Knocks. And again, it's the whole AFC North. It's not like the Steelers have been singled out here. I get his his fear and his first, like, his thinking, like, I don't know about this. But to your point, you know, they could have destroyed several of these franchises. I mean, heck, they were covering the Hugh Jackson Browns. And, like, there were some, you know, some messed up moments that they got there. But, you know, it wasn't like they tried to get them on every little thing here and there. Because, listen, in football, these are athletes. These are men who are competitive. And there are things that are going to get said that are not TV, you know, ready. You know, and there's things like that. I think that Cam Hayward and the Steelers will be fine for the most part. Now, you know, for the time of the season, this is what could be really interesting, is because we think of Hard Knocks, we often think of training camp. It's easy to get things right in training camp because there's no pressure on the line. But this is going to start when the gauntlet of AFC North opponents starts to run for the Steelers and they have to play those tough games. And if those games go poorly, that could be the really interesting component that makes things tough. And because if there's some infighting, if there's some struggles, I mean, you remember last year, George Pickens, you know, didn't block for Jaylen Warren. All we saw was George Pickens and his interactions with us. We didn't see how that was with the team. You know, if a moment like that happens where one player lets down the team in a certain way and it's a highlight and the HBO cameras focus on them for the next practice, what is that like? What does that peel out? What do we learn as the public that we normally wouldn't have learned because those cameras are there? I think that's the interesting point that could happen here for Hard Knocks and the Steelers.
Yeah, that's certainly true. And I think it's also important to note that it's going to be produced, you know, in the moment, kind of more like when we do these podcasts and we sit and we react. Hard Knocks is going to be reacting to an event and publishing an episode, as opposed to what they do in the preseason, where I think it's a little more narratively focused, where they say, oh, we've got Sauce Gardner. We're going to do the Sauce Gardner package and focus on him this week, like they did with the New York Jets last year. We're going to focus on Aaron Rodgers and his, you know, throwing grass in the air. I think there's going to be a little less soft, featurey stuff like that, and it might be a little bit more newsy and following, you know, the existing narrative and, you know, how the Steelers are reacting to that and all that. So do I think there's a chance that there could be friction and that kind of stuff? Absolutely. I just don't think that and these football players, for good reason, fear, kind of gotcha journalism. And because there are guys that practice that and try to get them in, you know, to say something that's going to cause controversy and all that. So it's an understandable fear from a wider media perspective. I just don't think these shows are focused on those things as much as the bigger picture story. So I'll be interested to see that. And I agree with you, Chris. I think the Steelers should want to embrace more of these marketing opportunities with these shows, because they're often directed at people who are not already football fans. They're people that are not like you and me.
Right.
You know, they're directed at people who like reality shows. Right. And it's their kind of touchstone to try to get into, sports. I think the F1 show Drive to Survive is probably the best example of a Netflix show that it did huge things for Formula One in America. And now tons of people watch that sport that weren't watching it before, because it's always been kind of more like European. But I think receiver, quarterback, I think that's been a touchdown for a lot of people too, because it, you know, especially like, female fans, for lack of a better term, they watch that and they like to know the people often, maybe more so than the X's and O's and that kind of stuff. So those like softer featurey segments where, you know, Debo Samuel's going to a pumpkin patch, people like to see that kind of stuff. And I think the Steelers would do well to, try to get themselves involved in a little bit more of that and maybe be a little more open to it. One other opinion that I drew from watching receiver this week, Chris, is that the facilities at some of these other teams are unbelievable. Have you seen the Raiders place? Establishment trust looks like a spaceship.
Yeah.
And even the Vikings facility is very nice. And then I'll be curious to see how the Steelers facility juxtaposes against some of these others. Although I don't think other teams in the division necessarily have these gaudy complexes like some of the other teams. But that was the other striking thing, Chris, is that, boy, when the players complain about the facilities for the Steelers, that's what they're looking at. They're watching these Netflix shows. They're like, wow, that Raiders facility is really nice.
That's the thing, is that they're looking at all. I mean, here's the other thing. You look at Pitt's facilities and like their locker room and things that they show simply on videos. Because again, we're not allowed in the Pitt locker room as reporters, but we've seen like how they've updated over the years, and like it looks high tech, it looks advanced, and it looks cool, it looks comfortable, and the Steelers kind of looks like your old school traditional locker room. And listen, that's part of the feel of the Steelers. They are traditional. They're the standard. They're the old school. But it kind of goes to your point about it'll be interesting to see what it's, you know, for people to compare side by side by side by side to the rest of the AFC North. And I think that will be the really interesting thing is how do these games play out? Because now you're going to see not just the one team, you're going to see how each of these teams react to wins and losses against each other as they all battle for playoff spots and the division and everything else there. That could be a lot of fireworks. I get why Cam Hayward has some hesitations, but I think it's going to be really good for the AFC North and for football to see all the insides of these, all these rivalries as they happen in real time. Adam, thanks so much for joining us here on the North Shore Drive podcast. We've got to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk to Noah Hyles because the Pirates are back to 500. How did they get there? Is this a good sign or is this just another sign that they're always going to be in the middle of the road? That and talk about their first round draft pick and then we'll be draft next here on the North Shore Drive podcast. We're back here on the North Shore Drive podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carter. We continue our discussion on all things Pittsburgh sports, and we turn to the Pittsburgh Pirates, who is covered by Noah Hyles, one of our great Pirates beat reporters here at Andrew Destin. And Noah, lo and behold, at the end of the All-Star break, halfway through the season, the Pirates are right back where they started with an even record. They're 48-48. They're third in the division right now. They are 1.5 games back of the wild card chase, still in that thick of that group of teams, but they were able to pull through and figure out a way to finish strong. You talked about the White Sox series and how they needed to do well there, and they swept them after splitting the last series. Where do you see this? Is this a good thing that they finished 500, or do you still think this is just, hey, this is just who they are? Do you think that there's any progress that's been shown for them to battle back to this point?
I think it's a little bit of progress. I mean, the big takeaway here is they finally went on some sort of streak. This team has been in purgatory for 2 months. They win two games, they lose two games. They win a game, they lose two. They win two, they lose one. Saturday's win marked their first three-game win streak in over 2 months.
Yeah.
And that's been the thing that's held this team back, where you see other teams like the Cardinals and the Mets and the Padres, they'll string some win streaks together to get a little bit of separation, and then, you know, some of them will regress over time. But the Pirates have never really caught any sort of traction, even with Skeens. They played better, but they can't string wins together. And if they're able to do this now, that's going to be huge because, and I've said this on another show, I think. I mean, that's, someone was wondering what's the reason to keep watching this team when they were losing, when they lost a series to the Cardinals and it looked like their season was done. And there's been a couple of losses this year where you just thought, okay, the season's over. But for some reason, they keep fighting back and they're still alive. The reason you watch is because, if a team goes on a run, and it's not just the Pirates, it could be the Cubs, the Reds, the Diamondbacks, the Mets, the Cardinals, the Padres, any one of these teams, if any one of those teams goes on a 7, 8, 9, 10 game win streak, the whole National League is immensely different. And I look back to 2018 when that team went on a 10 game win streak right before the deadline that forced the Chris Archer trade. And I know that kind of has a infamous tag to it now, but like if that happens with this team, it's going to be for real now because the National League, it's not, you need to go on a 10 game win streak to be on the cusp of a wild card. If this team goes out of the break and sweeps Philly at home, which is going to be very difficult. But if they continue this win streak, or if they finish out July winning every series that they have remaining, which would be against the Phillies, Cardinals, Diamondbacks, and Astros, four really good teams. If they win all of those series, they keep building. They're not just in the mix. They're a playoff team at the deadline. So that's why it's just you see the things here. Like the pitching is going to give you a chance to win every night. It's just, can you consistently generate enough runs to get over the hump and string it together? So I think, yes, it is a good sign that, sure, they swept the worst team in baseball that has 71 losses now at the All-Star break, or 70 losses. you should be able to sweep them. But like, that's part of it. You've got to beat the bad teams. Now you got to do this against good teams. You got to be able to keep this going, because if you can just take it up just a little bit, it gives more incentive to add at the deadline. And maybe they are just one player. I don't think they're one player away from winning a World Series, but they are maybe one player away from separating themselves from the Arizona Diamondbacks or the St. Louis Cardinals. When you look at their record, another big takeaway I have, they probably should be in first place. When you look at all of the games that they've lost, very winnable games, you throw 5-6 more wins into this, this is a different season outlook. So it gives me mixed reviews. I will say, though, it is a good sign that they're stringing together wins at this point in the season.
I feel like that's the thing here, right, is that we can say that, oh, well, they're still behind and they're still 6.5 games out of first place in the division. But this team has found ways to battle back there. And I think that it's something that you and I have talked about. We've talked about with Jason and we've talked about with Andrew. But there's character on this team. Mm-hmm. This isn't just they brought in guys who were supposed to help the culture of this team respond better to rough moments. And that was something that, like, last year, there were times where when they hit slumps, there wasn't someone to knock them out of it. And they at least have that this year. And I think that plays a big role in staying competitive. Like when they have got like Rowdy Tellez has bounced back entirely from where he was. People were talking about trading that guy. Now they're chanting his name. And we've talked about that and the impact that has had on the team. And you combine that with guys like Skeens, guys that have added to the consistency of Mitch Keller. I think that all of that contributes to the Pirates have done something to make themselves competitive. The question will be, will they take another step to give them a marginal step up in this group? Again, a cluster of really close teams that are all battling for the final playoff spots. And again, we're only halfway into the season.
Yeah, I think the big thing that needs to happen is you need more second half turnarounds like we saw Rowdy make in June and July. And I don't think you need to be as good as Rowdy has been. I mean, Rowdy since June has been one of the best hitters in the National League. But you look, I mean, Ke'Bryan Hayes had 7 hits in this last series. If his bat can get going and you can get Ke'Bryan Hayes to play to his potential offensively in the second half, that's a difference maker. If you get Jack Sawinski going, like he showed signs of in this last homestand. I know he didn't do really well on this road trip, but in this last homestand where he was hitting home runs, he was getting on base, he was making plays in the field, that's a difference maker. If you can keep Joey Bart healthy and he can continue to provide offense behind the plate, that's a difference maker. That's the big thing, because you just look, and I know I'm not trying to just reiterate what Ben Cherington's saying week by week here, but there is some truth to the matter. The reality is this team is not going to go all in for a player like Luis Robert. I don't see that happening. And sure, they can go get maybe a Taylor Ward or a Tommy Pham or somebody, you know, a slightly above average outfielder, but that guy's not going to make the difference. The difference is going to be Brian Reynolds continuing to play at a borderline MVP rate. The way he's played in the last 2 months, he's been one of the best players in baseball. You're going to need him to continue that. You're going to need more from Ke'Bryan Hayes. You're going to need Rowdy Tellez to keep playing better. You're going to need more from Jack Sawinski. And if you can get some of these guys who were an absolute detriment to the team in the first half to play even just average baseball, your pitching's good enough and your star player's good enough where you might be a much better team. This is a better team than last year simply because you look, their top three pitchers were so much better than last year's top three pitchers, and their best player is better than last year's best player. It's just a challenge of getting everyone else to contribute something. And if you can get that from Palacios, who's up now, if you can get that from Nick Gonzalez, who has kind of tapered off but still contributes in spurts, if you can get O'Neill Cruz to have just one monster month, it's there. It's not, again, it's not going to be World Series bound, but this team can string together a couple months of winning records and stay in this. And the longer you're in it, the longer it creates an opportunity for someone else for something to go wrong. And so just by staying around, they just need to continue to improve internally, and maybe an external addition or two will help them. But it's got to be on the guys already on the team to simply play better, because had Henry Davis played how we thought he was going to play this year, had Ke'Bryan Hayes hit the ball how we thought he'd hit the ball this year, Jack Sawinski, Michael A. Taylor, Jared Triolo, Rowdy for the first 2 months, this team would be in first place right now. It wouldn't be 500.
Last question here. Your quick take on the Pirates' first round pick, Connor Griffin, the ninth overall pick, shortstop out of Mississippi.
Yeah, I mean, this is the, I mean, he's the best high school player in the country. He was the Gatorade Player of the Year. Very rarely do you see the top high school prospect slide down to number nine. I don't know if that's a telling thing, like, you know, there's a reason Pickett slid down to wherever the Steelers drafted him, or is it just teams that were drafting wanted to get a college-ready bat? There's mixed opinions on that, but my analysis on him is if this kid maximizes potential, he'll be the best player in this draft. He's 6'4", 200 plus pounds already in high school. My concern is his lowest graded tool is hitting for average. The power's there, the arm's there, the speed's there. They drafted the best athlete in this draft class. It's just they need to develop him as a hitter. And if you look at this regime's track record, they don't necessarily have a lot of success in that department. Now, what I will say is this is a dude that is unlike anyone they've really drafted in this regime. All of their first round draft picks have been, you kind of knew what their skill was going to be. You look at a guy like Nick Gonzalez or Tamar Johnson. These are hit first players. Their tool is their bat. They're going to be someone you can bat in the top order, the top of your batting order, and generate runs, or the pitchers that they've drafted. These are guys that are going to come in and they're going to make a difference on the mound. Davis also falls into that category as like a hit first guy. This is just a crazy freak athlete. And I mean, the comparisons, some people have said if he maximizes his potential, he could be something similar to Mike Trout. I mean, that's a heck of a comparison to be made, but
that's a big comparison.
He's 18 years old. He's going to have a lot of learning to do, and it's, can they develop this kid into maximizing his potential? Because he's going to need some guidance. That's the caveat here, and it's a big one considering this organization, but the upside's pretty crazy, and you look at what else they could have taken there, this is definitely the highest ceiling available when they were on the clock. So I don't hate the pick. It's just they're betting on themselves to develop him. Not only him, but the two other kids they took yesterday, both high schoolers as well.
It's interesting with Victor. I'm going to keep doing it. O'Neal Cruz. No matter what happens, I'm going to call that man Victor Cruz every time I come out of his name. But it seems very similar to O'Neal Cruz's talent as far as just being a raw, powerful, athletic shortstop who is also big. He's 6'7", and who knows? I'd be interested to see if this kid is still growing. And maybe he gets closer to 6'7" in time. But you can get all that coverage from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette by going to post-gazette.com to read all of Noah and Andrew's work, because they're doing a great job there. Noah, thanks so much for joining us here in the North Shore Drive podcast. And thank you all for joining us here in the North Shore Drive podcast. Thanks, Adam Bittner, for joining us back Wednesday here with more on all things Pittsburgh sports on the North Shore Drive podcast. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all the sports coverage from the Post-Gazette that we have to offer, visit post-gazette.com.